Market insight and analysis. You're listening to the opening bell of CNBC's Squawk on the Street.
Good Tuesday morning. Welcome to Squawk on the Street. I'm David Faber with Jim Cramer. We are live from Post 9 at the New York Stock Exchange. Carl is on assignment. Let's give you a look at futures as we get set to begin trading a half hour from now. I always defer to Jim when I look at that because I don't know what it means. Whatever.
It's early.
Yeah, it's early. It's early. But let's get to our roadmap this morning because it does start with, we're kind of on deal watch this morning, but not the kind you typically think of. Here it's about Chevron warning that its $53 billion Hess deal could be at some risk. And then we've got the FTC and nine states. They're suing to block, of course, that Kroger-Albertsons deal, which Kroger wants to buy Albertsons. We're going to give you a look at retail and macro as well. Both Macy's and Lowe's shares are falling ahead of the open.
Weak
guidance, perhaps. And some, not really here, but there's always some who call it an AI tech bubble.
Yes. Sure.
Jamie Dimon says not so fast. My guess is we kind of agree with him. We'll talk about that.
Don't call it a bubble and it explodes, then you look like an idiot. If you call it a bubble and it doesn't explode, you still look smart. So it's an asymmetric level of reasoning.
You started the day so cynically.
No, I'm starting the way making it so that we protect our butt. Just kidding. The idea that it's a bubble, and then the idea that the Wall Street Journal has a piece saying that everyone's sucking up to Jensen Huang for the, I mean, bubble, but we have really serious people like Jamie Dimon who directly go to Jensen and say, because this is how you detect fraud. Maybe we have a new paradigm. Maybe every single chip that we have is an inferior chip.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe everything's conventional bombs and then Oppenheimer comes along and we just don't think about that. But we still need conventional bombs because of the way the world is.
We're going to talk a lot more about that.
You bet we are.
But I do want to start on something else that we have obviously discussed in the past, but that was something unexpected later in the day yesterday. And it's that at least the possibility, slight though it may be, that Chevron's acquisition of Hess is, you know, in some, let's call it jeopardy, as a result of something we were not made aware of until the proxy and the 10-K were filed yesterday from Chevron.
Does that bother you?
In which they, does that what?
Does that bother you?
No. It bother me? No, it doesn't bother me. It was a surprise, though, for those who obviously follow these deals. We're talking,
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, because
about one of the biggest deals we've seen in quite some time. We're talking $53 billion. All stock, you may recall. Not a huge premium as well for Hess at the time from Chevron, but nonetheless followed right on right after Exxon's deal to acquire Pioneer. What is a question here is a right of first refusal that was part of the joint operating agreement when Exxon and Shell began their development of what has become a prized property, namely that offshore oil reserves of Guyana.
Maybe one of the largest.
Interestingly enough,
you've been to.
I've spent time. I've actually been there. Got there on a helicopter. Went to the to the platforms. There I am. So I kind of interesting for me to actually know this as I do, and having spent time with so many of the operators. Exxon operates it, by the way, but Hess, it's the most important asset at Hess. And Jim,
but Hess has good relationships with the president of Guyana, which does matter. Correct?
It matters. And to boil this down, it would seem you come back to the language that we don't know and that we haven't seen and we won't see because it's confidential of this right of first refusal. But simply put, Exxon seems to believe or believes that a change in control of Hess represents a change in control in Guyana, because Guyana, that 30% represents so much of the company's overall value. And Chevron, what I'm hearing, and I assume you're hearing the same, is, and again, we can't see the language, but I'm told there is simply no way that's true. The language is not in any way indicative of a change of control at Hess being that. It doesn't say that, and they've made that clear. But the two sides continue to talk somehow about something having to do with this.
Is it possible, David, that Exxon wants something in order to go away, that this is a negotiating posture? Because if they block it, they don't get anything.
That's exactly right. If in fact this were to go to arbitration and an arbitrator were to rule in Exxon's favor and say, yes, we agree with this language, that in fact it is a change in control, then Chevron would walk away. And so it's not as though Exxon, to your point, Jim, would be in a position to buy what it doesn't already, the 30% of Guyana. That's what we'll call it. It's the Starbrook project. But so it would just go away. So So I will put it to you. What then, the talks that are apparently taking place and the concern that is raised in the market, you can see Hess shares are trading down. What do they want? What is Exxon actually conceivably going to get out of this?
You know, and if you step back, David, we're going to be talking about the FTC soon.
Yes.
But to me, it feels like, oh, okay. So Exxon and Chevron, they're in a room. They control the oil market. They'll do what they want. I mean, isn't this exactly what the FTC was really started to stop, that there's all this kind of old boys club? Now, I don't know about that.
No,
but I'm saying that this is not what you want. You don't want this kind. And David,
you're taking a look there at the water lapping up on the walls around Guyana.
It looks like Amagansett.
Yeah, it's not. The water is incredibly muddy as a result of the Amazon, which dumps out into it.
Okay, so
and it's
not,
brown. It is not.
It's not Sagaponic?
No, it is not nice.
Okay, so David.
Sure was.
David, now, you have spent a lot of time with the CEO of Exxon.
Yes.
Until this, I thought he seemed like a reasonable man.
Well, Darren Woods is a reasonable man. I think, listen, a few things here. Their lawyers at Exxon, who are still in the building, many of them, wrote this right of first refusal in 2008 when they put the joint operating agreement together with Shell at the time.
It's right.
Since changed hands. I mean, they obviously know what they intended, but, you know, Jim, again, I'm left, unfortunately, here not knowing what these talks that Chevron and Exxon both refer to are about. They talk about conversations. They say they will continue. From Exxon's perspective, they want to make sure, of course, that you don't want to set a precedent here for their other joint operating agreements they have around the world. But if, in fact, Chevron, just to be clear as well, completes, as it says it will, and it's not worried, the acquisition of Hess, the ROFR, as it's currently constructed, will remain. In other words, if Chevron then wanted to sell its stake in the Guyanese project, so to speak, Exxon would still have the opportunity to step up. They have increased tax basis or any number of other things around it.
But let's step back, because you've been covering this beat for a long time. Tell people how highly unusual it is to have this kind of deal where Chevron's worked it out nine ways to Sunday. It looks like it's not going to be a problem. Chevron and Exxon have had joint ventures before. They talk, and suddenly, out of nowhere, Darren Woods
is
adversarial after years of not being.
And it is unusual. It was a condition that we were not aware of. And when you look, it was something that was referred to, but it was not. It was a closing condition. It was another condition set forth on Section 8.1B/2 of the parent disclosure schedules, I believe. But we didn't know. Now we do.
I'm
we don't know enough. We haven't actually looked at the language.
If we had
the language of this, then we could have any number of different people opine on exactly what it says, but we'd have a much better sense as to whether Exxon has any real leverage here in a significant way. And again, what it is exactly they may want, given it's not in any way clear that we're going to end up with being able to buy more of Guyana, remains unclear as well.
Now, we also have the blockage of the by the FTC and states of the Kroger deal. But this was one I first thought, well, maybe Chevron hadn't done its homework. And then I go do the work, and Chevron had completely
Chevron was well aware of this throughout. And again, their contention, from what I understand, and I'm sure you do as well, is the language is in no way indicative of what Exxon seems to believe, which is a change in control of Hess represents a change in control of Guyana. Let's talk a bit about the other deal yesterday that got held up. Neither one of us surprised, perhaps.
No.
Kroger, of course, been trying to buy Albertsons. They have crafted a divestiture plan that has not met, at least, with the approval, so to speak, of the FTC. We've talked about this, Jim, any number of times. Both of us have anticipated the FTC would sue, I think it's fair to say. But then the question is, what now? Does Kroger have a shot here of winning in court?
No, I don't think so. I think that you get to page 20 and 21 of the brief. It's very well written.
The complaint.
the complaint by the FTC is very well written. And it talks about when the last time Albertsons did this, selling 168 supermarkets to resolve the competition with concerns when they did Safeway, and the stores were sold to multiple buyers, largely to Hagen, and the divestiture to Hagen and other buyers did not preserve competition, Albertsons promised. Within a year, Hagen filed for bankruptcy. Most of the divested stores were closed. Now, David, CNS, which is Piggly Wiggly, wants these. Now, unlike Hagen, which didn't have enough money, was not a shrewd operator, Piggly Wiggly has money here.
They do. CNS has financial backing from a number of important players, right, including SoftBank. And so there is an expectation that they have the financial wherewithal, at least, to compete. But that's not something that rises to the level the FTC believes.
That Jonathan Cantor at Justice feels that this kind of deal, but both Khan and this was what was said. And I explained this to Rodney McMullen, that I was surprised, the CEO of Kroger. Look, the one thing that Cantor and Khan have in common, FTC and Justices, they feel that these deals fail when you sell, when you carve off, hive out, and say, listen, we've now taken care of overlap. They have, like, said point blank, Jim, well, I don't speak to Khan, but Jim, this kind of deal doesn't fly.
Yeah.
And this is something that we're going to block no matter what. I think that that a judge might say, you know what, they've been pretty rigorous about this. And the law says that you can't have something that fails. It's got to be. Look, this is not.
How big a setback is this for Rodney McMullen, who, you know, at Kroger, they continue to say their long track record is of reducing prices. They've spent $5 billion, or they've invested $5 billion to lower prices in the last 20 years or so. They continue to talk about this. If, in fact, as many of us anticipated at the time it was announced, that it, in fact, does go by the wayside because a judge agrees with the FTC. Right. How big a setback is it for McMullen?
Well, I have to tell you, it's a big setback because the world has changed. He's going up against Walmart and Costco. They're bigger. They're more powerful. By the way, his outfit's union. And he does say, listen, union jobs be preserved. And that's to be able to get Biden on his side. Neither here nor there. But if you're going up against Costco and Walmart these days, you better have scale. And believe it or not, Kroger actually needs more scale.
But they're not going to be able to get scale.
No, they can't.
So they're boxed in.
Yes, they are. They're boxed in. And you want a competitive Kroger. Now, I think people would be saying, Jim.
You're saying both sides, by the way, Jim. One side, you're saying
I'm saying one side has been very, very, very rigorous about their view. But Rodney is telling me, the Kroger's telling me, listen, they don't understand that Costco and Walmart are the enemy, not like the local guys. And he's right. He's right. Costco and Walmart could wipe out anyone. And that's what the FTC should be worried about. Not Hagen Safeway, but at the same time, I understand. They said, listen, we don't like these deals. But I think the world has changed, David. When you look at Costco and Walmart and Amazon, that's the big three. There's no room for Kroger in that world.
Well, another reason why we are focused on this deal. It's not,
no
not
room
unimportant.
For them. The new world. Right. It's happening very fast.
We had a little deal chat there, top of our show. I liked it.
It's because this is kind of American capitalism at its heart.
It is interesting. It really is. All right, we're going to talk more about Jamie Dimon's message regarding AI. Of course, Jim gave that a brief mention at the top. Let's give you another look at futures as well. We start trading here 16 minutes from now, but we have a lot more Squawk on the Street straight ahead.
This is not hype, it's real. And so people are deploying it, you know, at different speeds, but it will handle a tremendous amount of stuff. We're all gonna get better, faster, smarter. Bad guys are gonna use it, so we have to build the systems to counter the bad guys. You know, it's being used to combat cyber right now. It's being used everywhere. So it's not hype, this will be for the rest of your life.
Jamie Dimon with our Leslie Picker yesterday at the JP Morgan High Yield and Leverage Finance Conference. That was in Miami. A lot of conferences in Miami. That was his take on AI, of course.
Right.
Would love to know what it means for jobs when you hear Jamie saying things like that. But not a surprise, right?
No. Jensen Huang, the CEO, made it a very big point in NVIDIA, all the verticals that can be changed because of this. Healthcare vertical change with a lot of younger companies and none of the older companies. And what he's saying is, okay, you have to look at everything and figure out what would it matter if it ran much faster and what would it matter if it burned less. And almost everyone would conclude, well, it's better.
But then you look at the price tag, and it's very expensive because there's not enough, there's very few for versus how many are needed of the H100, we have the H200 soon. And I think that therefore there's there are long knives out for Jensen, like the Wall Street Journal article, which I really didn't like.
Why didn't you like the Journal article? Well, the article today you're talking about,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, well, because I don't know Jensen well. I know him to have dinner with him, and I know
yeah.
him
Yeah, well, you know him better than many of us.
I know him to admire him greatly, and to mention that he now, like, has a lit, you know, someone drives him, and he talks with these big guys. I mean, what are you going to do? If Mark Zuckerberg's your biggest customer, what are you going to just, like, say, listen, Mark, I'm sorry I don't talk to you. That's not... He does it because he's a cordial man and a kind man. And I feel that it made it sound like that he's a changed man.
You know, what is interesting, and the Journal does talk about it a bit, and others do as well, is the idea that his customers are also trying to compete with him.
Right.
It's very much unclear whether they're going to be successful in that effort, whether they can accrue the talent they need, not to mention how you sort of make up for the huge lead that they have. It's not like NVIDIA is stopping its innovation.
No,
but Amazon and Meta, I mean, they're all trying to design. They're all designing their own chips, right?
You brought that up because, again, these articles make it seem like that everyone's chafing. Jensen has never said, don't develop your own. Jensen says, look, my biggest competitor is Lisa Su at AMD, and I really respect how great she is. And by the way, Lisa Su will say, I respect how great Jensen is, and they're ahead of us because of the software. The actual hardware, they're roughly even. But Jensen has said to me over and over, look, if they want to develop them, that's great. We want to try to make as many as we can of ours. We're concerned about our business. We're not concerned about
right.
their business. And that's actually what, when you and I speak to businesses, they typically, the CEO, you'll say, other than AEP, which I've been working on all morning, and it's very disturbing to me. We'll get to that.
Okay.
They typically say, look, that's, if Amazon, which is a great client, wants to do something to make it so that they bring stuff in-house, that's fine. It's their business. By no means, this is why I didn't like the tone of the article. Does no means does he say, you know what, if you develop that, we'll cut you off, you're finished. It is so not Godfather with the guy. And again, if you go watch this crucial interview with Jensen and Frank Slootman, who I have on tomorrow night from Snowflake, it's kind of the opposite. Like, Snowflake said, why don't you charge less for these? And Jensen, I don't know. I mean, I spent 20 years developing this.
What interview
thing.
Are you talking about?
It's an interview that Snowflake had at one of a conference.
I see. Is that available online?
Yes.
Okay.
And it was a critical moment because Frank Slootman is a very tough guy.
Yes.
But he's saying, listen, why don't you rent this stuff before you buy it to his customers? You can
right.
come on and be discreet. And Jensen's not discreet with that either, but that would be the reason why I know there's no bubble. Because you can try it. And if it works, then you can go long-term with somebody with Amazon. But the people who are trying it are all liking it.
Yeah.
So that's why, how do I call it a bubble if Snowflake's customers are enthusiastic and then therefore they go long-term
and
with
any
it?
Number of other reasons why. It's in no way, in my mind,
it's the most important story out there.
Right, equal to what we saw with the advent of
but
the Internet in the mid to late
Jensen's
90s.
Jensen's change. I mean, oh my God, that's painful. I mean, I think he has to work hard to not be changed.
Yeah. All right, get ready for your mad dash, please.
Are great athletes and coaches changed by when they win?
It's hard. Yeah, but they still, the real ones are just huge competitors. They're relentless. So it's just like, I want to win next year, and I want to win next year. I think Mahomes is like, oh, I'm done now?
Thank you. Thank you. That's what he is.
All right, more Squawk on the
Street. Great way to put it.
Right after this. All right, there you can take a look at the S&P gainers. Of course, it's, you know, there's extended hours, too. As Jim always tells you, be careful. Jama Traders and the like. Norwegian Cruise, though, and Carnival, both leading the pack. We got a lot more for you, Red. All right, welcome back. Man, you've just been working furiously during the break. You want to do a mad dash on Macy's, right?
Yeah, okay, so Tony Spring just took over.
Who just took over?
Tony Spring. He's from Bloomingdale's.
Okay.
Good friend with Jeff Gannett. It's a very good, smooth transition. And I really like what he had to say today, which is that, first of all, the numbers were fine. And they were not promotional, which means that they had very little inventory.
Okay.
And I like that. But what Tony's doing is something that a lot of people have been hoping would eventually happen. Given the fact that he is from Bloomingdale's, and Bloomingdale's numbers traditionally are better, same-store sales numbers are better, he's going to be closing up to 150 Macy's. Now, Macy's had many, look, there's 500. Jeff Gennett close to 100.
Right.
They're underperforming.
So there's 500 going now to maybe 350?
350. Yeah. And he's going to accelerate the growth of Bloomingdale's. Bloomingdale's has, you know, they've got a number of 85 stores. So at a certain point, you could see that among Macy's, Bloomies, and then Blue Mercury, which he's also going to be big with, and that's high end of a. That would change for me. It would make it so it's a more upscale company. And people like that. Now, they're going to get out of some malls that are underperforming, of which there are still a lot of Macy's that are underperforming. And I think it's, look,
you know,
I'm not going to say it's
just
a big
hold the thought. Let me
thing,
let me do the
sure.
Let me do this. That was Borg Warner and Team Penske celebrating the upcoming IndyCar season, doing the honors here.
Okay.
That was 2023 Indy winner, Joseph Newgarden, who did the honors. There's okay. The NASDAQ female-founded independent music company Reservoir Media and the hip-hop group De La Soul. Some notables there. IndyCar winner, hip-hop, well-known
yeah,
hip-hop
a lot
group.
A lot of...
all right.
Not a lot of...
Finish your thoughts on Macy's, which, again, well, the headlines are a relatively new CEO, as you point out.
Yes, new.
Had been on the Bloomingdale side of things.
And,
and now talking about another 150 Macy's store closures.
So what you're going to be doing is you're changing the mosaic to where it's a little more related to Bloomies. Presumably the 150 are not as good as stores as the other 350 that are left. And you're right, you have $1 billion in cash, $1.3 billion in cash flow, and you end up with a story that should not be this low. And it's very exciting. And Jeff put it on this. I do not want to just say like Tony did this, and Jeff can't.
It's very exciting.
It's very exciting.
Very exciting.
Well, yeah. I don't know. Yeah, I think so.
All right.
I like Bloomies very much. By the way,
stock turning around a bit right now.
Lowe's was down big. People are
hold on,
not understanding.
Hold on. Let's,
I'm
let's,
sorry.
Let's just I'm slow sorry. Down for a second. We're going to move to Lowe's, so let's talk about it. I'm getting the numbers out here. What did you like? What didn't you like about the quarter?
Well, again, if you've been following what Home Depot said, then you would know that Lowe's was actually quite good. They have a do-it-yourself problem. Everybody knows the do-it-yourself problem has a lot to do, by the way, with the weather being really bad. And Marvin Ellison, I think, once again, has delivered a very good quarter. The propensity of retail is to sell down when they initially report and then rally. All you have to do is look at the panning that Home Depot had when it reported, and now the stock is up nicely. So don't give up the ship, Lowe's. Marvin Ellison is doing a terrific job. And as far as I'm concerned, the consumer is robust, but they may not be doing as much at their home by the admission of Marvin Ellison, because the weather, but also, David, we don't have a lot of homes changing hands.
No, we don't.
And that's when you go to Lowe's, is when a home changes hands.
Mm-hmm.
And so that has been the big negative. I think that a lot of people are worried that the price of homes keep going up, but that's a supply issue. And you know, I don't want by any means say that the home builders are in a room holding back development so that they can make a lot of money. It's actually the opposite. If you listen to Doug Yearley, the unbelievably good CEO at Toll, they're giving her all she's got. They're making as many
homes
as they
can. New homes as a percent of overall are far higher.
But they're not back to where they were when we were
new home sales, though,
country.
As a percent, right, of
yeah.
overall. I think I have the numbers somewhere.
Well,
but we've discussed this many times. If you have a low-rate mortgage, you're unlikely to want to move.
Right.
Even if you want to move, you perhaps are not going to. So, yeah.
Right, and that's why...
Home sales market historically has been 90% existing,
right.
10% new. It's now 70% existing and 30% new. Again, because
right.
of the mortgage.
In my view, if you're talking with a lot of the home builders, is that if you wanted to drive the price of homes up, all you do is have to make mortgage money even more expensive. In the most inflationary thing that could happen at this very moment is for the Fed to raise rates.
Right.
And that's a little counterintuitive, but there's no glut developing because there's so much.
So if and when rates fall, is Lowe's a buy as a result of
absolutely.
That at Home Depot?
And that's why I think that a lot of people are jumping the gun and presuming that rates will fall. I think that that's a tough call. But I do know that that's the prevailing wisdom. And a lot of times I think people at home are confused between what's happening now and why people are doing whatever they're doing.
But there is just a perception overall that there's no doubt about the fact that rates are going to fall. So therefore, let's buy Lowe's now.
Lowe's, by the way, $133 billion market value. Our viewers know I like to tell people how large these companies
are. I mean, when I looked at MasterCard the other day, I couldn't believe it's like, it's $400 billion.
Yeah, I mean, some of the size of these companies, and Lowe's is obviously one of the largest retailers as a result
of
that.
But I will tell you,
I want to ask you about something, because we don't talk about it as often, which is capital return for a company like that. So $133 billion, they returned $8.9 billion in capital to $2.5 billion worth of dividends. They also bought back $6.3 billion worth of stock. Most recently, spending another $404 million to buy 1.9 million shares during the reported quarter here.
Right. Well, Marvin Ellison is very unsung, and I think one of the reasons why he's unsung is he's probably one of the. This is CEO of Lowe's, one of the least promotional people in the world, and he lets the stores do the talking. I know in the do-it-yourself era, his stores, I'll send him a lot of pictures of his stores because I've, you know, it'll be my 36 years as a gardener. And he's intensely interested in how the stores look, because if the stores look good, then he takes share from Home Depot. Because Home Depot is known for the professionals. Now, along comes Builders FirstSource, David, which just carves out the professionals. And then you've got a very serious competitor.
You love that Builders FirstSource.
I do. I think that they're an amazing company. They're not in New York to speak of, so it's, that's why you don't see them.
Yeah.
But they're also wholesaler. That's where the home builders buy their stuff. Okay? If you're a home builder, you don't go to Lowe's.
Yeah.
But when you think of Lowe's, you'd be thinking about Trex,
right.
AZEX, hammers, nails, paint. And some of those are doing very, very well. Lumber is up and down. But overall, these are companies where Christmas... It is in another month, and that's why it's very dangerous to sell them.
Right,
because their Christmas is April, May, June.
Let's move on to a few other movers this morning, particularly around earnings. Zoom,
we've discussed many times, obviously.
Nothing quite approaching anything what it once was.
The 2%
pandemic
versus, say, 17 by work day.
But Zoom shares are up 9%.
Big
also,
buyback.
Do you have the...
You have the CEO on tonight, who's the CFO. Now,
okay.
One of the problems with Zoom is if you have a Microsoft, this morning there was a refresh, and you had to basically, your system was working slowly unless you refreshed. And when you refreshed, it just drove you right to Teams. And it's almost impossible to get out of the Teams orb. David, sometimes I think this is kind of like a lawsuit that we've seen before. In 1999.
What, that Microsoft is...
It's very hard to get out of Teams if you have...
Right.
But they're not... No one's suing on that. There is a lawsuit in Europe about Slack, but I find that Teams is very hard to get rid of.
It comes up.
It comes up
constantly.
Won't
let you... Yeah, just...
No, it won't. I'm going to ask Kelly about that. Now, Kelly's a diplomat, and the company's really intensely interested in what they're doing, which is they need to develop more apps. They need to develop, yes, more AI, and... When you look at Zoom, one of the things that you can have Zoom is that let's say you work at Goldman Sachs.
Yes.
And I work at Goldman Sachs. I'm trying to teach you. And we do a call. And in it, they can very quickly tell you whether you're doing the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the call's filmed. And that's a good app. But it needs more apps, but it also needs more long-term contracts. It's an important company. It generates a lot of cash, but it's got a DocuSign feel.
That doesn't sound so good.
No, and anything that has a hangover of COVID, the sooner we get over it, the better. This still has a COVID hangover, but it's a very good company because people like the product. But the product's been commoditized. As you know, when someone says to the CEO, says, listen, I want to see you, I set up a WebEx call. It's like, well,
right.
Apple's winning on Teams. You know, I mean, there's
right.
just
Although,
too much competition.
I mean, it is become, it's like a verb, let's Zoom, but it doesn't mean you're going to use Zoom.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And Teams is so easy to use because it just won't stop.
Now, all right, so that's interesting. You don't sound that particularly positive on the future for this company, even though the stock's obviously performing well this
morning. I want better growth. You don't buy a stock for a buyback. They do have a lot of cash. You buy the stock because of vision. And I want their vision traced out tonight. That's what I'm hoping for. But Kelly's a straight shooter. We'll talk with her.
Free cash flow.
Now, in full
free cash flow was $1.471 billion.
That's very big. Now,
I know, for the year.
No, someone's going to say it. My stepson worked for them.
Yes, we know that. But he's no longer there.
No, but if I don't say that, someone will say, well, why didn't you mention that?
Yeah, but that's a long time ago that he worked for them.
I don't really want to talk. I mean, look, I'm not disclosing it because I like what I'm
crying about. All right, well, I think at some point you don't have to disclose it anymore.
All right, yeah, there should be like a...
In fact, you know what I'm saying right now? This is the last time you need to disclose it. You're done.
All right, I'm done with that. Now, how about Chevron down three, as people obviously believe that this thing's going to drag out?
You know, I'm again, Chevron Hess, we spent a lot of time on it. We don't need to do that again, Jim, but it is very interesting. I'm trying to sort of look at previous times when Exxon has sort of done something similar.
How far are you going back?
I'm going way back, potentially. The BP Arco deal many years ago, this is when Lee Raymond was running things at Exxon.
Holy cow.
Apparently, they blocked that with a ROFR due to the risk of control of both the oil and gas cap in Alaska. Then they settled. ARCO got the majority of the oil. Exxon got the gas cap, Prudhoe Bay, Alaska. So,
maybe there's something.
The question here is what Exxon thinks they have, what hand they have to play, and what these talks are actually about.
Exactly. Well put.
But to Jim's point, Chevron down. 2% Hess is also.
Now, David, Pioneer's also in play. I mean, there's so much going on.
Down 3.5%. Yeah. Well, it's not in play.
No, it's getting bought. It's bought. Yeah. And I just find that the deal making in oil, a lot of it is people are saying, well, it's because they don't want to find new places. They just want to drill existing places.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's kind of rational.
By the way, I mean, this just moves on Exxon stock because it's an all stock deal, as we know. And that is the case with Hess as well. Chevron has been an underperformer a bit, Jim. So, when you are talking about what Hess would look like without the deal, certainly it might decline, but it was only a 5% premium to begin with.
Right.
So there may not be as much downside. Again, Chevron is not saying anything close to like this deal is in any jeopardy. In fact, they're saying the opposite.
Well, let's talk about some read-throughs.
You know what? Let me get quickly to another deal that I've been following, or potential deal. Tiny bit of news, but I get called on it all the time. I'm talking about Endeavor. Remember the possible take private of Endeavor by its largest shareholder, Silver Lake?
I was going to disclose that I'm a customer, a client of them.
Yes,
but
you
after
are a
how
client.
You chastised me in the Zoom, I don't really give a damn.
Yeah, well, I don't really think it matters that much here.
No, it doesn't.
I just have the stock has been selling off. You can see that. I haven't talked about this in some time.
Wow.
But remember, they own the majority of TKO as well, which reported. They report earnings tomorrow morning. I think there had been a hope and a thought perhaps that you would get some sort of a bid here from Silver Lake prior to or in conjunction with earnings. That won't be the case.
No.
That said, I am still told by people familiar with the situation, who I do believe, that there is an expectation a bid is going to be made. It is taking quite some time, and often when these things take longer, we get or those investors who care get more concerned. There's a lot of financing that needs to be lined up. Maybe they're trying to pre-sell some assets. But again, there is still an expectation on the part, I think, of a special committee that is waiting that there will be a bid presented. So that's all I can tell you on Endeavor. However, it will not be today or tomorrow or this week. We're talking March now. Of course, March begins very soon. That's all I got for you.
No, that's important. I did not know. I saw that stock drop. I did not know where it was.
It was because people were starting to say, well, wait a second, there's been this hope we get something before earnings.
Right.
And when yesterday there wasn't, they started to wonder. I've got for you. I wish I had more.
No, I wanted to give a little bit of the consumer read-through.
Please.
I said we're getting good numbers, lows. I like the Macy's. But
when
the Norwegian Cruise is up 13, Carnival up 8%.
Yes.
Royal, again, up almost 5%. That's a sign of a robust consumer. Now, it's absolutely true that cruises are they're a relative bargain. Versus, say, going to stay at a Marriott for 10 days or going to stay at some place that we know is like 15
hours. Well, do we have those? Because, they were the leaders of the S&P before we started trading.
And I just continue to think that this shows that the consumer is traveling. And whether it's Southwest, I know that's amazing, Southwest Air, or whether it's, frankly, United, there's just people going on planes, going on cruise ships, and I don't want to lose sight of the fact that there are people who continually come on air who talk about the weak consumer, okay?
Right.
Well, that's
look at
not,
the move in those stocks.
That's not a weak consumer. By the way, Altmar, somehow Tesla's bottoming. People starting to take a shot at the lithium stocks.
Right, don't lose track here. Finish your thoughts on the consumer.
Yeah, well, I just think that, I was watching David Malpass, who I really respect this weekend. He was on another network. And he was speaking, and he was just saying, well, the weakened consumer, the weakened consumer. And I'm beginning to think, David, that we're going to, I don't like to talk politics, having been from a household where the father was Nixon Goldwater and the mother was McGovern. You just didn't talk politics without just ruining
right.
the meal.
Okay, I could see that.
I do feel that we're going to begin to get candidates.
So particular
who are,
takes on the economy. You don't
right.
think the consumer is weak, is your
no,
point.
No, I don't.
But David
I mean,
Malpass, obviously,
but that doesn't
long-time
make me
Republican.
A Democrat.
Right.
I mean, but I, when I hear that the consumer is weak, I ask, please show me. Because this is an example. Like, if the consumer weak, they don't need to go on a Norwegian cruise. That said, Norwegian cruise is a relative bargain. I booked one to go to Alaska. I thought it was going to be very exciting.
Yep.
And it was the last week of February of 2020.
Man, I was down in Miami, as I said the other day, and watched those cruise ships are, I mean, they are...
Oh. The floating
the size of them is, you cannot...
Like the Empire State Building.
Yeah, on its side. It's incredible.
Right.
Incredible. Just
I
watching
know.
Them.
And they're filled.
As they go through
bargain,
the channel out into the out into the
they're
ocean.
They're a great bargain. They're very exciting. Now, you know, I'm sure there are a lot
just,
of
just
Wall
an aside here, because
be
they are,
dead on one.
It is stunning what we can do.
Right.
A,
now, also, David, let's go with...
No, let's go with Cava.
Now, Cava, it's a plus.
You know, and
I'm
going to come back and give you a little praise here, because I remember when it went public, and
no,
I was like, who
Cava.
Knows, you know, and you were positive.
Well,
but
positive because it's an ethos. It's an ethos story, meaning
it's
we want casual. It's good for you. So it's, some people feel it's the next Chipotle. I never like to say stuff like that. Chipotle's great. But they did have same-store sales of 17.9. They're opening 17 new net Cavas. There's 309, and 30% year-over-year growth. What matters is that it's the heart, health, humanity, Mediterranean diet that people like so much. I have said over and over again that until I stop seeing the seas in the window, there's been some seas. Now,
I'm sorry, what?
Well, having owned a restaurant, when you get a grade,
yeah,
and if it's
oh,
any,
a C as an ABC, or like
right, that's a bad thing. And
give
now,
me a C, yeah, okay,
a C is very hard.
Yeah.
But
a bouncy C.
I got a B when we opened Bar San Miguel, and I was coming to work, and
I
could think was like B, B,
I wouldn't
B.
go there.
No, of course not.
It's bad.
And it was the hood of the, you know, they got come in with the glove, and I worked it very hard to get an A. But what I learned.
We're talking about the New York City Health Department
food.
Grades
but you don't
on restaurants.
To run against them, but
I don't know how we got here. I have no idea. Maybe because we were talking about Cava.
Cava had some ways that weren't
oh,
perfect.
Oh, right.
You can look on the website of the
right.
city.
Right. They were not the one right down here.
Correct. That's why I'm saying that.
Was
when
it
you,
a B or a C?
When I spoke
it
to
was a C.
C.
Oh, that's
when I
horrible.
I spoke to Chipotle. Chipotle, if they don't have an A, they close the store until they can figure out
you don't
out
want
to
see. That means
no,
maybe
C.
there is like...
A gentleman C.
Yeah, gentleman C.
Yeah.
A bouncy C. Remember that was an SNL
C. It's 9:47. Can I stay for your interview with Jay Rizzullo?
No.
Okay, thank you.
No, you can't. It's not till 11. I didn't. That was
no,
Sarah. That's
no,
Sarah set that up. You think Sarah's going to let you come in on her interview?
Yeah, she will. But
really?
I'm not going to be here. I have other things to do.
You do, huh?
Yes,
what
I do.
World are you living in?
I have other things, trust me.
Ooh, that sounds interesting. All right, let's give you a quick look at the bond market as we head to a break. Treasuries this morning, you ask, what are yields looking like? Well, there they are. 10 years, 4.299, pressing against the 4.3. And you can see the two-year at 4.702%. We'll be right back. Here's a look at Tesla. You know, if you haven't noticed.
Yeah, this is, I'm telling you, they called the bottom there on 198.
Yeah, I mean, the stock is, as our viewers can see, up 11.4% just in 1 month, but still off almost 18% for the year. But moving in the right direction, if
yes,
you know.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. We'll keep an eye on shares of Tesla and the entire auto complex as well. Up next, we got Stop Trading with Jim. We have some time for Stop Trading. What do you want to talk about?
If you shoot the king, you have to kill the king, but they're not. Viking Therapeutics has a phase 2 trial that went well that is able to get you to lose weight faster than Eli Lilly's GLP-1.
It's also a GLP-1,
yes.
This Viking?
Yes. Now, here's the problem, David. When you have these things, the FDA wants to favor the incumbent because it's already been approved. Secondly, Eli Lilly has a similar formulation. But third, and what seems to be left out constantly, is it's really hard to build all the plants you need to get this. You got David Ricks, who's very good, knows how to build the plants. Viking Therapeutics has to do a tie-in.
All right, but we do need to show shares of Viking Therapeutics, Jim. It's a $6 billion company.
It's up 65, it's up 26 points.
BKTX guys back in the control room. Take a look at the stock this morning. Again, Jim just told you, on the back of these phase two trials for its weight loss drug. Wow.
Yeah. Well, look, enjoy it while it lasts. There's many challengers. Amgen was a challenger. Pfizer was a challenger. Amgen still has.
Well, Amgen is actually down 3% today, in part maybe on this as well.
Yes, it is, because Amgen is going further and further away. People were hoping that they had a once-a-month injectable. People felt they had a pill. Believe me, everything that this Viking has, Dave Ricks is working on at Lilly and has something. He has a phase three that's ahead. Phase two is very, very hard, very expensive. And they're already in phase three.
While investors may be rejoicing at Viking's.
Yeah, it's good to take profits.
Science.
Unless some Pfizer comes on and buys them, which I think is highly unlikely.
Get into the weight loss.
You never know. But it is it's a very exciting category. And a lot of companies want to be in it. But people have to understand, I've worked with the FDA. The FDA, once you have a drug, they take their time with the second drug.
There's a therapy
rush. When it came to when I worked on migraine, they were willing to have a second migraine. They wanted to have the word out. I find the FDA to be incredibly responsible.
All right, real quick, what do we got on the program tonight?
Okay, I've got Him and Hers, which is up very big in there. I'm trying to figure out how much of that is weight loss. They have weight loss. They have a healthy sex life. Figure I have the guy on.
Yeah,
why
not?
Like to lose, right?
Why not?
You know?
All good things.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's like sex life and having a good time. It's just like it's a good time stock. And then Kelly Steckelberg from Zoom. But Him and Hers intrigues me because there's 15 million people want to have a really hedonistic time. But it's not hedonistic. It's actually hell. And it'll steer you, by the way. I filled it out this morning. Oh, I should save it. It's kind of funny.
But is it?
Steered me toward, yeah.
Okay. We got to go.
It steered me toward an incredibly active sex life. Not.
All right, more on that tomorrow when you join us right here on Squawk on the Street. But coming up in the next hour, Goldman Sachs' chief U.S. equity strategist, David Kostin, looking beyond the Magnificent Seven.
You've been listening to the opening hour of CNBC's Squawk on the Street.
All opinions expressed by the Squawk on the Street participants are solely their opinions and do not reflect the opinions of CNBC, NBC Universal, or their parent company or affiliates, and may have been previously disseminated by them on television, radio, internet, or another medium. You should not treat any opinion expressed on this podcast as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of an opinion. Such opinions are based upon information Squawk on the Street participants consider reliable, but neither CNBC nor its affiliates and/or subsidiaries warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such. To view the full Squawk on the Street disclaimer, please visit cnbc.com/Squawk on the Street disclaimer.